welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 246, and I am still your host, James Gilmore. Joining me this week is Peter Willington.
Hi.
Hi, Peter Willington.
Hi.
I think I'm going to say that like that from now on. Whenever editorial meetings, I will be introducing you as Peter Willington.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a musical day.
Oh, really, has it?
Yeah, it's there was the impromptu staff meeting where we all got together and we did like a Glee-esque song and dance number. Were you around?
I do love Journey. Bit of Journey in the morning, sung by tone-deaf video game journalists.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it was, you know, we did all the air grabs. Mark did a little, he can do pirouettes really well. I'm really impressed. And Keith, of course.
He did that thing where he jumped into the air and froze in midair. And it took him it took us like an hour to get him down, though. It was quite, you know.
It was, yeah. I really felt like that sort of put a dampener on occasion.
Yeah, but apart from that, it's been quite good. My musicality has extended to singing in the shower, which I had about 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I tend to do that. Actually, I sing most of the time, really, to the annoyance of, I assume, anyone within earshot.
Do you narrate your own life in a musical number, like that episode of Buffy?
What's it called? Once More with Feeling.
Something like that, yeah.
Not that I watch Buffy quite.
No, of course.
Oh, of course not. No, I do narrate my life in general, though. I'm one of these people who talks to himself.
How do you mean?
You know how most people talk to other folks?
Right, go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't need the other folks. I just sort of talk to me.
Oh, do you do that thing that I do? I'll be sat on my desk and, you know, nobody will be in the room at all. And I'll suddenly put my mouse down and go, time for a coffee.
You give yourself like memo updates.
Yeah, absolutely. I do.
You're like your own Siri.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Except for I can actually find things.
I tend to have arguments with myself, which I often win. Not all the time, but most of the time. I don't know why. I think it's a psychological way of preparing yourself for other situations. This is how I've rationalized it.
Yeah, go on.
Rationalized it to myself out loud, obviously. I think it's a way of preparing yourself for situations in the future. So you have an argument, and I will literally put an argument to myself and then respond as I think someone else might respond. And it's like working your way through a problem, which most people, I assume, do in their heads in a nice, quiet, sensible, not crazy way.
Oh, but I don't think that that's the gibberish of a madman. I think that... So for example, and anybody who does any sort of writing who's listened to this will know this, like when you finish a piece of work, one of the best things you can do is read it out loud. That's a really good bit of advice that people kind of give because, you know, you want to know whether or not it flows properly.
I actually have to because I have to do video reviews. So I literally do spend my day writing and then reading it out loud.
Exactly. And maybe that's exactly the same thing with maybe some people have to, and I'm the same, but maybe some people have to, like, say a conversation and an argument out loud, otherwise it just doesn't make sense.
I'd like to think I could just do it without the words, though.
Well, let's...
And to be fair, I'm aware that I do it, but I'm not necessarily at the time. Like, I'm aware it's a thing that I do, but I will occasionally catch myself going, oh, well, I'm speaking out loud to an empty room, and then someone walks in and looks at me kind of funny.
I tell you what, next time, you know, we meet up and have a big company meeting or whatever. If I see that you're sort of like, I don't know, dribbling and talking to yourself in the corner, then maybe I'll do something about it. But I think for the time being, Professor Willington has given you the sane mark.
Give me the all clear.
Stamp.
I'm very happy about that, and so am I. First on the updates this week, if you haven't bought XCOM, first of all, buy it, because it's really good. It's really, really good, right? If you have bought XCOM, then you're in luck, because you can now do the multiplayer on it. Yes, do the multiplayer.
Yeah.
It's like the Hokey Cokey, only there's even more people involved. If you're not in the know, then it's a pretty much direct port of the console and PC versions of the game. It's the top-down isometric alien shoot-a-thon, and it's really, really, really good. We reviewed it, said it was great. I loved it. Massive, massive, massive game. But it didn't have the multiplayer mode. And developer Fur Axis, they said, oh, it's coming, and it hadn't turned up for a while, and it's been out for a month or two. But as of now, it is available. You can do asynchronous multiplayer malarkey Via XCOM, which means that you can meet up with someone on Game Center, you do a move, then put it down, then they'll do a move, then I'll put it down, and you can just have these huge intergalactic battles. Well, I suppose they're on Earth, so they're not that intergalactic.
Is the multiplayer humans versus aliens?
Yes. One of it you is. Picks up alien mode. I'm saying yes. I haven't actually tried it out on iOS. I assume that it's the same thing. But yeah, I think it's one side takes control of the alien buggers, and the other side is Mr. Marini.
So do you ever get in the single player? Do you ever get any time in with the aliens?
No. You're purely building up your base. You are XCOM peoples. And if you haven't got it and you're thinking, oh, I'd like to get me some of that XCOM, well, then grab it now because it is currently half price, which in most games means it goes down from, like, I don't know, £1.99 to 99 pence. In this case, because it's a little bit more dear, usually it's like £12 or £13.99. Now, £6.99 for basically the full XCOM game, which is still retailing for 20, 30 quid on consoles, which is an utter bargain.
Bargains.
So we suggest you get right on that. If you are less interested in blasting aliens and more interested in seeking out little rusty robots, though, Machinarium, which is the point-and-click adventure from Amanita Design, which is a Czech developer that do these wonderful, quirky little, almost hand-drawn games. Machinarium came out a couple of years ago on PCs. Point-and-click adventure, very whimsical, tells a story without using any words. It's all kind of pictograms and little speech bubbles that shows tiny little animations. So charming, ever so clever and quirky and lovely. It took a year or so and then it turned up on the iPad. As of next week, it will be available on iPhone, which is a real boon because you've been able to do it on iPad for a while, but because it's kind of small, the characters are all pretty tiny on screen, it would be very difficult to do that on iOS, but they've just introduced a pinch to zoom function, so they've gone and whacked that onto iPhone as well. If you happen to have the iPad version already, you will still get an update which gives you the pinch to zoom options and all that, and also it'll immediately become a universal app, so you can sling it on over to your iPhone at no extra cost.
That is a bargain.
It is a bargain.
Have you played Machinery?
Oh, yes. I played it on the PC when it came out. Bloody loved it. It's, well, it's, you know, point-and-click stuff, which has gotten a big resurgence lately, the genre, because people have, mainly through Kickstarter, gone, oh, do you remember all the point-and-click games? Wasn't Beneath the Steel Sky good? And aren't modern games rubbish? Let's do all of them again. But this is a genuinely new one. But the art design is so pretty, and
so
the puzzles
good.
Are lovely and... I mean, they're still quirky in that point-and-click way, but there's a little bit more logic to them, I thought, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And so if you've stayed away from it because you haven't got an iPad, then now you've got no excuse. I suggest you grab it the moment it comes out. I think it costs you £1.49 or $1.99 for a little bit. It'll then go up to £1.99, but if you get 50p off if you buy it early. And finally, enough of all this arty, clicky, cerebral nonsense. Call of Duty, innit?
Yeah, mate.
Call of Duty, mate. Yeah, blood, bro fist. Call of Duty Strike Team, which is the weird hybrid game that got released recently, kind of out of nowhere, suddenly appeared. And we went, oh, Call of Duty game, that's a bit weird. Which is 50% first-person shooter, boo, hiss, boo, and 50% top-down tactical strategy game. Hooray, hooray. The latter of which works better than the former, obviously. It came out and it got mixed reviews. It's like bits of it work better than others. The top-down view works better than the first-person stuff, frankly. But there was a survival mode where you can go in and, you know, do like endless shooting and all that and waves and that sort of thing, which you had to unlock by playing through other missions, which some people got a bit sick and tired of doing. So they've decided to just unlock all the survival maps, just like that. Boom. So you can just fire it up right now and click on all the red dots around the map and just jump straight into a survival game if you want to. How's about that?
Yeah, it's the most interesting Call of Duty game in a few years.
Yeah. I think it copies something that they did in Black Ops 2 or something. I don't really keep up with console versions anymore, but I think it's an idea that's been ported over from one of them.
Do you know, the last one I played was the first Modern Warfare.
The first one, I got to the second one. I managed to get that far, yeah. And it was like a 5.5 hour campaign or something. And just went from like Michael Bay set piece to Michael Bay set piece. And I just got bored at that point. Like, oh, God, yeah. Must be. But then I'm not doing the multiplayer stuff that much, which is really the point of it. I will concede that, you know.
I've heard it's top fun.
Have you? I have actually played it multiplayer, but it's just not my... Military shooters aren't really my bag, so I can't complain. It's not aimed at me. It's not for me. But if you do like that sort of thing, then Call of Duty Strike Team, innit? As as you probably already know, if you are an iOS user, iOS 7 came out a couple of weeks back. So now your iPhone or iPad looks a bit new, a bit newer anyway, a little bit more flat, a little bit more like Windows 8, if we're honest. So everything looks a bit more tiley and a little bit less shiny. But it's not just a visual change that's taken place. You've had some adjustments under the hood as well, one of which has been freaking people out recently, specifically in-app purchases, which frankly freaked me out just by mentioning their name. But the issue people have been coming up against is if you buy an in-app purchase, right, at least on the old system, in the old good old days of iOS 6, do you remember? When tasted like chicken.
Oh, and it was all fields, wasn't it?
It was, far as the eye could see, yeah. And everyone left their front doors unlocked, and you didn't even have to put in a password to get a game. They just gave it to you. It was amazing. No, that's not entirely true. If you wanted to buy an in-app purchase in the middle of your game, say you're playing away and you think, oh, I'll get some more energy for one of them lovely energy systems that we all adore, then in order to pay for the bloody thing, it would say, confirm your in-app purchase. You click on buy, and then it'll say, do you want to buy one of these packs for 69p or something? And then you'd click buy, and then you'd have to put in your password. That's the way it always worked. Now, when you click to buy, it immediately throws up the password option and asks you straight away to put your password in. This has freaked people out a bit because they're like, that's the last stage of the transaction. Because if I just type this in, am I just going to buy it immediately? Because what people are worried about is when the password comes up now, when it says sign into the iTunes store, enter your password, it doesn't show you the price anymore. And people are a bit worried that they've hit a button accidentally or they've tapped it. They're not sure how much it is, and if they put in the password and press enter, have they just purchased it, like, without getting any kind of extra confirmation? And it's given a few people pause for thought, and we've had a bunch of people commenting and sort of writing into us saying, oh, what's this all about, and am I just going to accidentally buy a bunch of in-app purchases? Apparently developers have been having correspondence for this as well, with people writing in going, well, you've messed up our save. It's not their fault, and you can check the price of it before you actually buy it. They've essentially inverted the system. So now you click to buy an in-app purchase, and then you input your password, you press OK, and then once you've done that, it will bring up the confirm your in-app purchase screen. So it will say afterwards, do you want to buy this? And if you want to do so, then you click buy and you can buy it. So there is an opt-out after you've put your password in.
So what do people gain from this?
I don't know if there's a real benefit to it. I think they've just taken the process. It's still a two-step process, but they've just inverted it. All it's done so far, apparently, is freak people out.
Well, exactly, but this is the thing, right? So you don't change something if it isn't working. Like that, I think we can agree on that, right? It's not logical. Yeah. And I think design people at Apple are smart enough to go, if we change stuff and don't really tell people, this might freak a few people.
Weird them out a bit. Well, one of the arguments put forward by game designer Ben Furno, he reckons that it's a positive change this way because what usually happens is if you're a kid, right, and you're playing your little game and you want to, you know, spend £150 worth of your parents' money on energy that doesn't really exist.
Yeah,
in
why
real
wouldn't
world.
You? Right, it's not your money.
What you do is you click your in-app purchase button, you choose the most expensive one, and you say, yes, buy. And then it'll pop up and show you the password screen. And then, and only then, you wander over to your mum or your dad and say, can you just put the password in? Because I wonder, it's 69, it's only 69p. And they put the password in and it doesn't show them the price. Mm. They press enter and it goes in-app purchase. And you're like, nice. And you've just spent 100 quid of your parents' money without them knowing. Whereas this time, if you go over to your parents and say, I need your password, they put the password in, and immediately the next thing that pops up is a screen with the price on it.
And they're like, what? How much? How many fluff berries do you want?
Exactly.
No way.
Swipe the iPad from the grasp of their young child, and then they lock the child in a small room under the closet, and they grow up to become a powerful magician.
That's a reference, isn't it?
That might have just been a film. I saw that. It was from that that great series of documentaries, Harry Potter.
Oh yes,
you watched those, did you? They were on Discovery.
They sort of went into a school. They put cameras all around. Like people didn't react to the cameras, and you know they were just kind of filming everyday life, weren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And some of it's amazing what they get up to.
Do you know what? The schools schools have changed a lot since I went to school.
Yeah, I know.
I used to go to the tuck shop and there'd be chocolate bomb donuts and refresher bars and all that sort of stuff. And now there's candy that turns your tongue into a frog.
You didn't have that?
No, we didn't have that.
Oh, well, that's maybe my favourite.
Maybe I grew up in a poor area. I didn't, but maybe I did.
In another life. Yeah, so, don't fear in-app purchase lovers.
Yeah.
All five of you. You will get a chance to cancel out of your purchase if you put your password in. The password is no longer at the end of the transaction, so don't worry. It's all cool. Now, more gamey stuff, if you don't mind. Although, not technically a mobile game. Beyond Two Souls came out this week. Yeah, I have to say that.
Beyond Colon.
If you just call it BS, Beyond Colon. I don't want to... Beyond Colon is the toilet, isn't it?
It might be.
Anyway,
according to mine, it's the at key.
Oh, yeah, that as well, I suppose. But no, according to David Cage, creator, designer, writer extraordinaire of games like Fahrenheit and Heavy Rain, what lies beyond is two souls, one of which is played by Ellen Page.
Yeah.
And the other one, which I maybe that's played by Ellen Page as well. I don't know. It's her little ghosty buddy for that console game, which has got decidedly mixed reviews this week. It has divided people.
It's garnered all of the scores from 6 to 9.
Yeah, I know. From 4, I thought I saw some 4s.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I think VideoGamer.com gave it a 4.
GMAs are coming up, aren't they?
They were unimpressed. Well, this kind of thing is divisive. It's one of those games that straddles the divide between gaming and cinema.
Yeah.
And Cage reckons he's reinventing the wheel. Some people are saying, no, you're not. This has been around for ages and you're just doing it badly. I liked lots of Heavy Rain for all its flaws, and I haven't played this one yet.
Have you not?
No, I haven't played it yet. Well,
I've played the first 4 hours.
And?
I liked Heavy Rain. And this is that.
Okay. Well, people are saying that the plot line isn't as engaging, and the way it jumps around the timeline, chronologically speaking, is disorienting.
It's really bold. The jumping around the timeline stuff is really, really bold. Like I don't think it mucks with the thing at all. It's a bit more sophisticated. Like in terms of its chronology, it's a bit more sophisticated than.
Did you just call VideoGamer.com unsophisticated, Peter Williamson?
No, I would never say that VideoGamer.com was unsophisticated.
What I'm writing in the notes underneath this.
Oh no! I actually do quite like.
I know they're good, aren't they?
The work of
we're just planning.
We're just. Oh come on, Matt! Don't get upset. I think it's an intriguing game in so much as, like, you know, Cage puts out unique stuff.
He's a funny character. Cage.
He's a one, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a card.
He's aw. But yeah, I think it's pretty good. I didn't try it with the new control method.
Yes, exactly. Well, the reason we're even talking about this in the first place is because you can play Beyond Two Souls on your iPhone or iPad and on your Android device.
Hmm.
But not as a full game download, obviously. You use your touchscreen controller as a control-y device.
Yeah.
So you can actually take charge of Ellen Page and her tiny little legs and move her about the screen using your iPhone if you want to.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they streamline the controls quite heavily, obviously. So you don't just get a version of a PS3 pad or something suddenly pop up on your screen. It's done through things like gestures. So you'll get, like, you can touch and drag to move Jody around the screen. White dots will appear, and if they do appear on the screen, you just tap them and you can interact with objects, and that way they do. You can also use it to just sort of hold your finger and look around. So in some ways, you might consider it more intuitive than using the controller, maybe. But obviously, I think they limit quite a lot of the controls as well.
Ultimately, it's a game that's not really about mechanical complexity. So, like, it feels like anything to streamline the experience to get to what you want to get to, which is the story, I guess, is probably a good thing, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't appeal to me very much. I get the impression it's just a... feels more like a gimmick, I suppose. And all this second screen controller stuff, I don't really buy it.
I really like second screen stuff, and I think there's a lot of potential. I think this is a very obvious move forward, as in the screens, for example, that we've got. You know, we've got it replicates a digital pad and buttons on the screen. You know, that's really, you know, that's second screen 1.0. But like some of the stuff in the future, I think will be quite cool. And I think the Wii U, for example, that's a second screen device, really. I think that that's got a lot of potential.
And that's kicked off massively, hasn't it?
That's kicked off incredibly well. But the one question I feel that hasn't kind of really been brought up is, why isn't there a Vita version of this app?
Yeah, which I suppose could effectively use it. I assume it can't do it through the normal dual play thing.
Nope.
Oh, well, that's rubbish then, isn't it? No idea. They should do that.
It's a bit naff. But yeah, I like second screen stuff. I think this is very much like Cage's work. This is, you know, very simple, very straightforward, not really taking advantage of the medium as an interactive one. But that's not really what he's after, is it, really?
No, and I say I liked Heavy Rain, and I'll give this a play at some point. I might try the touchscreen controls. I'm not especially bothered there.
Nah, I'm not either.
But you can do it if you want to right now, iOS and Android. If you've got them, hook them up and guide a little Ellen Page round with your finger. Why not? Mm-hmm. Moving away from weirdo interactive cinema movie things to good old-fashioned turn-based RPGs, Final Fantasy VI or III. Mm-hmm. Depending on your global positioning at the time, because it's one of those ones where it was 3 in the US.
Yes.
Because it was the third one to come there. But in Japan, it was actually the 6th game because they'd had all 6 and we hadn't had half of them. However, whichever way you look at it, the one what's got the girl in the little robot suit and the green hair. As it's known in some circles.
Yeah.
A very small circle, mainly going around me. Just like that. Anyway, Final Fantasy VI/3 is coming to iOS and Android.
Hooray.
Yeah, I mean, which is cool because it's arguably the best one.
It certainly is. There is certainly a contingent of people who believe that to be true.
Diplomatically done, sir. Yeah, it's the one I really like. It's got a huge bank of characters. It's got like 14 characters or something, which is more than any of the rest of them. But of course, it is not about quantity, but about quality. And the like lead protagonist female, the story, I think was the most more engaging than some of the other ones. And I liked it when it was back in that snazzy pixel arty style. I think it looked really nice. That's not to say that it didn't look good when it jumped, you know, went all polygonal.
Polygonal.
Yeah, I think that's a word. Mm-hmm. If it's not, it is now. That looked good as well, but I like the old school.
Me too. I think for like Final Fantasy historians, because apparently they exist, like four
degree when I was signing up to uni.
Yeah, that's right. I think 5 is probably the one that's like really unique and it introduces quite a few of the mechanics for the series has become known for. I think it introduced active time battles, for example.
Which is the one where Jobs turned up? Was that 4?
I want to say 3 or 4.
Yeah.
6 has, yeah, I think 6 has got this really great story, and there's some moments that are, listener, I don't think that you will, I do not believe that you will believe me, but there are moments that are exceptionally moving.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it's quite touching in places, and genuinely does it well. I mean, the same can be said of other Final Fantasy games when they get it right. The whole series has this overarching melodrama, which pretty much all JRPGs do. They tend to go for the big kind of, no! Moments, because they don't do anything small, the Japanese.
No, well, this is it. I mean, like, so have you completed 6?
Yeah.
Have you? So there's a bit where you're
spoilers.
I won't spoil it too much. There's a bit where the world around you changes shape somewhat, and you are sort of stranded, and for whatever reason, you kind of feel like you're abandoned, effectively.
Did you roll one? Slow tear for the eye. They're all gone.
Yeah, basically. And like, there's a bit where, and it's very, very smart. There's a bit where effectively you do the same thing over and over and over again. And you think that you're not really progressing, but the game is absolutely watching you do it. And it's great. It's one of the early moments where games kind of show they can use gameplay elements to affect your emotional state. I'm being deliberately vague, but six is excellent. And of the Super Nintendo games, I think it's probably the most sort of emotionally impactful before they started sort of jumping the spiky haired shark.
Yes. Speaking of which, this Final Fantasy VI announcement, which is exciting in its own right.
Absolutely.
I mean, not that I haven't already got it on an emulator on my Android phone, obviously, but I would still like to get a new version. Apparently they're going to source up the graphics a bit, which is nice, bring it in line with some of the other remakes that they've done. That would be cool. But they're saying if this project goes well, they release 6 and it does well, then maybe Final Fantasy VII will follow.
Yep. I mean, like, we, as sort of ethical journalists, like...
Speak yourself.
Well, yeah. You know, we can't say, well, it's definitely coming, but let's be fair, like...
They'd be mad not to.
They'd be mad not to.
Squeenix, and with its various cash cows, especially the way that they price them, that's a game they could price at 15 quid and people would pay.
People would not blink about paying 15 quid for Final Fantasy VII.
Even if they have 5 versions of it already.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, right, like, 7 is a great game, and whatever the critics will say about it, like, there's bits of it that, you know, you could argue probably are a little bit racially insensitive, and like that, you know, some of the elements of it, like the snowboarding and the chocobo racing, aren't necessarily amazing.
A bit whack.
They're a bit whack. But it's a great game, and you just know that, like, you know, the systems can easily handle it. Like,
oh yeah, gosh.
It has to be coming. They must at some point. Square Enix just has to hit the big red button. and just go with it, you know. And you know, once 7's there, then they'll have the engine for 8 and 9. And
well, that's kind of exciting. I mean, I can't pretend that Final Fantasy 7 doesn't get me a bit excited.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great, and it was a huge deal when you're on that PlayStation. You open up the box, it's 4 discs worth of pure JRPG action.
You reminded me. Do you know? This is terrible. I never completed Final Fantasy VII.
For shame.
It's not for shame. Right, here's why. Here's story why. Okay, so a friend of mine lent me the set of 4 discs, right? And yeah. I got right to the end, and I got to that moment at the end of the first disc.
Right? Oh, yes.
That moment. And for whatever reason, that disc was scratched just at that point. And you can't skip cutscenes.
Oh, so are you on the continual cutscene loop, or did
so
it just crash out?
It got to Sephiroth raising his blade, it just skipped, and it just hung there, and that was it, and nobody else I knew had a copy of it, so I couldn't progress, and that was
all
it.
You've done of Final Fantasy VII?
That's where I got to, in Final Fantasy VII, I was like, and I felt like dropping to my knees, and just like... Like that's been my experience of it. So
left you with emotional blue balls there. That's terrible. Then you just went to YouTube and watched it.
Yeah.
I've actually had to do that. I did a song back in my previous silly career as a silly songwriter person for games. One of them I did was called Damsel in Distress, which was a song which was kind of ribbing on the whole, you know, archetype of constantly going and saving girls and that's all you do and then it all just starts all over again. And that pivotal moment of which you speak was one of the key bits I used in the video for it. Lots of slow motion stuff of cloud and the water and the floating downwards and all that. Oh, sad times. I'm watching it, rolling a little tear. probably. Final Fantasy VII coming to iOS and Android. Hurrah!
Hurrah!
Out and about this week on iOS, we have a metric ton of new content, starting off with Costume Quest from Double Fine, which you may have heard of before if you are a PS3 or Xbox owner. It's that game from Tim Schafer Studio, which was released on the Xbox Live and the PSN downloadables, which lets you dress up for Halloween, which I suppose is kind of thematic.
It's a dressing up. I've played a dressing up game. What?
Not that game where you lock yourself in the wardrobe and try on your girlfriend's clothing. That's a different game.
Oh, right.
Though equally fun, I will grant you.
Yeah.
No, this is a game in which you play as one of two little twins. You choose which one you want to pick at the beginning of the game. And you go around trick or treating on Halloween. And the idea is you're supposed to collect a bunch of candy, but also collect bits of costumes. And when you dress up in these costumes, you transform into the creature which the costume represents. And then you get into great big fights with nasty monsters. It actually did very well, critically anyway, on the consoles. Got lots of good ratings, and it has the kind of same chirpy, wry, little humorous stuff that you'd expect from the creator of Monkey Island and Psychonauts and whatnot. You can get it at this very moment. It's £2.99 or $4.99. It literally just came out, so we will have a review coming for you very soon. Expecting good things, though, given the pedigree of the original. So we're hoping they've done a right good job with that one. Next up, Ring Run Circus, which is by Callio. It's a ring puzzler thing in which you take control of a little person who runs around the inside of these rings. And the idea is you have to hop from ring to ring trying to get stars. If you tap the screen, you can go from running inside the ring to running outside the ring, and you use that ability to travel between other rings that are on the screen. You get jumps and speed boosts and other characters as well. It's a bit tricky to get used to, apparently, but it's a clever little reimagining of the platformer thing. £2.49 or $3.99. What else have we got, Peter?
We have got Duet. That's by Commubius. Commubius.
That'll do.
That'll do, won't it? It's £1.99, $2.99, iPhone, iPad. So this is kind of like a cross between Super Hexagon, a reverse breakout,
right,
and that GBA launch game where you've got a constantly moving stick and you've got to move it through a tunnel. What was that called? I want to say it was called Kuru 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 Rin or something like that.
I'll take your word for it, sir.
Okay. So you've got two dots and there are white lines approaching towards you, and those two dots are joined, hence Duet. You can make them spin left or right, but they can't move away from one another, and they can't move towards one another. So almost like one of those sort of electric wire buzzer games, you need to sort of feed both of these small coloured circles through a path, effectively. Yeah. I personally haven't played this one, but from all of the videos that I've been watching of it, because I saw it and just went, yes, it looks like your next obsession. And if you're the sort of person who gets like hardcore game obsessions, this is the one that is going to be the one that kind of grabs you.
Right on. Sounds groovy. I will have a look at that one then. Mm-hmm. So I like those things. Pivot was really good fun that came out recently as well. One of those guide around games where you're stuck to a little line and you have to move along.
It's kind of pivoty, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It looks a bit like that. So yeah, that could be fun. What else we got? Steampunk Tower by Dreamgate. This is apparently a tower defense game, but one in which rather than you controlling an area on the screen or one side of it and having people advancing towards you or something, you control an actual tower in the center of the screen. So it's like a skyscraper sort of thing. And you have to stop people coming in who are coming in from the left and right sides of the screen, stop them coming in and trashing your lovely skyscraper. So what you have to do is constantly reconfigure the skyscraper itself. So you slap on gun turrets and whatnot to try and blast them all away. It is apparently quite good fun, but it is a bit in-app purchase heavy, which is sort of a shame. Bit fiddly on iPhone, but doesn't get boring that quickly. Quite nice. 69p, 99 cents, if you fancy it. What's next?
Well, Type Rider is the next one on the list, and it's from Bulky Picks.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's another week. it's going to cost you £1.99 or $2.99. iPhone, iPad. Okay, so it's a physics puzzler. It deals in silhouette quite a lot. But I suppose it's not really silhouette. It's more ink, and it's on paper. So you want to move these small objects from location to location upon a sort of moving page. It's that typical sort of you want to get from one point to another, right? Like that we've seen that kind of game idea 1,000 times before, probably. But the really cool thing about it is it's sort of an edutainment title. You learn all about the printing process and fonts.
Oh, what? I'm not going to be informed about stuff, am I?
I know you're going to do learning and that.
You keep my brain out of this, Peter. I came here to game.
Apparently, it's fun. Like you know
Get
how
out.
Mario, you know how Mario is missing wasn't fun. Well, this is the opposite of that. Like it's a legitimately entertaining look at an area that we don't really think about. Like we don't really think about how important fonts are to our everyday life. I know that sounds really...
You're right, Peter. I don't think about that.
Okay, but you know how people get all upset about a Comic Sans, right?
Yeah. Rightfully so.
And rightfully so. I mean, it's a little bit... Yeah. But you know, like you look at other type fonts and they're really important to like the world of advertising and to like a clear type font is really important when you've got a safety poster, whereas a really impressive bold Roman looking font is something that you would want to put on a maybe a formal letter. And I feel like, you know, we use the written word all of the time and it's a really important thing to advance, you know, civilizations that are advanced as ours are. This is an app that will sort of do that and teach you all about it, but also you get this weird little physics puzzle at the same time. I, for one, have added this to my App Store wish list. I really want to play this.
Can't I just shoot a zombie?
Yeah, or you could just go on Wikipedia and read all about it.
All right, then. Well, there you go. Type Rider, fill your boots. One game which I will mention very quickly in passing, so I'm going to talk about it later on, is Kami.
Okay.
By State of Play. It is a cube-based puzzler, which is drawn out like it's been pieced together on crepe paper. It looks dead pretty. It's out now, 69p99. If you want to hear what it plays like, then just stay tuned and I'll give you the skinny a little bit later on. In the meantime, Empire by Crazy Monkey Studios is also out. It's from the guys who did 100 Rogues, and it's kind of like a mashup of a bunch of different strategy games. So you've got civilization-style city building, lane-based battle like you'd get in tower defense titles, and a big deck of cards, apparently. Like you get in those card games that I have little to no interest in. Apparently it's quite easy to pick up, though, according to Mark. You're always being attacked, but it gives you a chance to perfect your crafty art. And it could be the thing, if you like your big strategy games, you might well take to this one. £1.99 or $2.99.
I think if we're being honest, we are teetering around the edge of this week's real exciting release.
Oh, yes. Which is?
Which doesn't happen to be on an iPhone or even an iPad, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I didn't. There's nothing beyond an iPhone, and I don't know what you're talking about, Peter.
Well, from
Neo
the
Geo.
Yeah, that's right, Neo Geo Pocket.
Dreamcast.
Yeah, the handheld Dreamcast. Was there a handheld? No, there wasn't. There was a Nomad. No, there wasn't. Anyway,
this is what I'm talking about. Talking to yourself. Neo wasn't just me.
So the really exciting, awesome game is only available on Nintendo branded consoles because. Pokemon X and Pokemon Y, we talked about this really briefly last week, and I was like, oh, I can't really talk about it because we're sort of not allowed to. But it's out now, and the NDA is over, and we can talk about it.
Pokemon X and Y!
Yeah.
Just checking.
So, what's that? Oh, it's an award. What colour is it? What metal is it made of? It's made of platinum.
That rarest of metals.
The rarest of metals. The most coveted of Pocket Gamer Awards.
Yes, that's a 10 out of 10.
That is a 10 out of 10. Now, so when I assigned this game to Mike Rose, he basically said to me, like, do you know, I haven't really enjoyed a Pokemon game for a while. And I went back and looked at his work after I'd assigned it. And I kind of went, yeah. Like, and I kind of thought, actually, he's the perfect person to play it because it's a reinvention, right? Like, yeah. And he sort of said in this big brilliant article like 9 months ago, he said, you know, Pokemon really has to try something completely new. It has to completely reinvent itself because it's getting boring now and I'm checking out. So I gave him X and Y and he gave it a 10. It's phenomenally good.
Yes, that's what I've heard. I mean, I'm not the biggest Pokey fan person, but it's gone from 2D to 3D and so now battles are actually fluid and they move and
But it's, apparently it's more than that. Like I'm yet to play it. Like the game's out in like a day or two, and apparently it just the move to 3D. Like when you think of Pokemon, you think of walking around the overworld in up, down, left, and right, and that's it. You know, like there's
no like Link to the Past style.
Absolutely, there's no diagonal movement, and it's kind of you think that oh they've just gone to 3D and that is just a visual thing, but apparently it just brings so much more life and passion and excitement to like the actual world itself. Like it just feels more complete and it feels like you're actually on an adventure and you are going out and capturing these Pokemon. When he sent me the review, he said like, here's the review. Can't really stop to chat because I need to go and play even more. You know, he had the game for like weeks and weeks and weeks beforehand or however long it was and he's still playing, he still loves it, whereas like, you know, I'm sure you're probably the same, James, like I tend to find when I've completed a game for review, I tend to delete it from my iPhone, or I tend to get rid of it, or just stop playing it, you know.
Yeah, I have to make space generally, but there are ones where you're like, right, done with that, sick of this now,
exactly.
Moving on.
And this is apparently one that he's just like, can't stop playing. He said, I've spent a week going to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning simply because I can't put this game down. So it's all very exciting.
Nice, and that will be coming out October 12th, I believe. So that's a Saturday, as we discussed, so it's not to crash the Japanese stock market.
That's tomorrow.
Oh my word, that's exciting. So yeah, as you're listening to this, if you've got your 3DS or DS or 2DS or anything with a DS in it, or whatever, yeah, grab it. Got to catch them all, Peter.
Go on.
Yeah.
Charizard.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Cool, blimey, it's a bit cold in here.
Oh, isn't it? Nippy.
Someone left the door open. The door
to the
chamber wherein lies the throne of games.
Brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. It's cold. I had this problem with my bedroom where I went in, and the little door that goes in had been left open. It was freaking freezing. And now I enter the large castle wherein lies the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. Mm-hmm. And it's bloody freezing in here. So close the door, somebody. Okay. And let's talk about them games. I understand you have games to talk about, Peter, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, games and games only. Let me...
just games, though, mind. Only games?
Yeah, no, just games.
Excellent, all right, then.
Shall I just head on up to the game?
Yeah, all right,
throne
then.
Of games?
You hop on up.
All right, okay. Oh, I fooled you, James.
What?
I know. I've got some stuff to show, but I'm on the throne now, so you can't say anything.
Oh, it's ever so high, I coach. Guards!
All right, okay, listen. While the guards are on their way, I have got something to tell you. And do you know what? It's free, so you can't really complain about it too much. Swipe Issue 9 is available right now from the App Store. So if you've already got Swipe, the app, on your phone, just update it. That's what you got to do.
What's Swipe, by the way?
Swipe is the digital magazine from Steel Media, which is the company that owns Pocket Gamer and App Spy. But Swipe's had kind of a facelift. Basically, it's pretty much all Pocket Gamer content, right? So it used to be like lots and lots of different sites that all kind of collaborated together. But what we've done for this issue and issues moving forward is kind of the best of Pocket Gamer, right? In a beautiful looking magazine. And I know I have to say that, right? But I can tell you right now, the guy who makes it does not listen to this podcast, right? I can say whatever I wanted. But, Joao, genuinely... It is a great looking magazine, right?
It is.
Like, I know you take your iPad to the loo. I know you do, listener. It's filthy, but we all do it. You go on there and you want something to read, right? Well, the 21st century says that you've got to have a decent digital magazine. And it is absolutely, absolutely gorgeous for that. Front cover's got Asphalt 8 Airborne on it. It's got this huge review, lots and lots of details on it, really super high resolution art. There's a brilliant Game Loft interview in there, talking about the game and other games kind of coming up. And there's a big feature on like the 25 best free games, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And the best part about it is that it is like completely free. So it's not like we're trying to sort of like shiv you like Ezio, right?
In the
like,
back.
We're, yeah, like a ha-ha. Like, and it's
then
free. And it's
do a little lie down on the floor while the world dissolves around you.
Hey, why did you try to sell this app? Oh, it was terrible. Now I recount all of my sins. That's basically...
I have to go and sit on a bench and listen to someone for 15 minutes.
I just completed Assassin's Creed 3.
I
it's
can't
right.
be arsed with it. I can't.
It's all right.
I'm like 5 hours in and already I'm like, ugh.
Do you know, I liked it, but by the end of it, I didn't really feel like I learnt that much about the Assassin's Creed universe, and I certainly didn't feel like the character had progressed that far. I'm excited for number 4 because I want to be a pirate.
I don't care about pirates. I'm excited for number 4 because the guy behind 2 is responsible for it.
Yeah. Do you know what?
That's reason enough for me.
But the waves look so good. It looks so good. Anyway, and so that is the reason that you want to go and get Swipe.
Exactly, because of Assassin's Creed.
Because of Assassin's Creed.
Fantastic.
So go and get it. It's really good. And I'll stop shilling tea now.
Right, you. Right, just for that, I am going to kick you off the throne.
Right,
and I'm jumping up and I'm going to talk about an actual game.
Okay.
Which is the point of it. And then maybe, if you're good, you can hop back on later.
All right.
All right. Fair enough. Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Brilliant. All comfy now. Okay. So, I mentioned it earlier. I'm going to talk about it proper like now. Kami, which is the Japanese word for paper. A very fitting name for a game which is all about paper. Right, so what it is, it's a grid-based puzzler in which you're presented with a whole bunch of little coloured squares, all of which look like sort of square folded bits of paper, crepe paper. And what you have to do is you have to turn the screen a single colour by tapping different coloured areas and turning them into a different colour. So, for example, you'll have a screen that's 50% red squares, 50% black squares, and you've got a little colour palette, like as if you were painting, on the right-hand side of the screen. So if you want to make it all black, you tap the black color palette, and then you tap any of the red cubes in the red zone, and that cube will then unfold, kind of, and it will cover the whole red area in black, thereby turning the whole screen black and winning you that particular round. So it's a fairly standard idea, and we've seen this kind of puzzler before, a few times, actually, where you know, you're tapping colored areas and trying to turn the screen one single color. So in that sense, not entirely unremarkable. However, what it has going for it is stunningly good presentation. I've been playing this for a couple of weeks now, because I've got a little preview build. And in that way that they scanned in elements of paper to make South Park, to make it look deliberately crappy, they've done that same thing here. All the assets are taken from real paper. And as such, looks amazing. The transitions that you get, so when you tap a block color and it starts unfolding, look phenomenally good. The moves between different levels are done very nicely. You get this kind of origami-esque folding where it tells you the score that you've been given, whichever gold. You're obviously trying to do it in the fewest possible moves. And sometimes that can be quite tricky. It gets quite sort of tough quite quickly. You have to think about 12 moves ahead sometimes to work out precisely in what order you need to do it. But the presentation really does sort of grease the wheels, if you like, for your journey through it. And it makes it a very, very pleasurable one. It's got that Zen puzzler quality to it. And you can do it leisurely at your own pace. But as long as you do it in the fewest possible moves, can get tricky, can get frustrating when you can't think of the right answer. But the puzzles are nicely done, well considered. And really, the presentation and the amount of care and attention they appear to have put into the way the game looks and the way that the game unfolds, quite literally, is really, really impressive and makes the whole thing worthy of note, elevates the entire experience, in my view.
So I'm not a huge fan of puzzle games generally, but if it didn't have the art style, would it be seriously compromised as a game?
No. I mean, if it was just block colours, it would still function just fine, then it would be a perfectly fine puzzle game. You could do this game with a drum and bass soundtrack, I imagine, and really angry flashing colours, and it would be an aggro puzzle game. But they've chosen to go the kind of organic route where everything looks very natural and the sound's gone that way. So as a result, it gives you much more of a relaxing kind of experience, that Zen puzzler sort of thing. And it's really nice. Like, it's not going to change the world or anything, don't get me wrong. It's a style of gameplay we have seen before. It's just been executed really nicely. And if you like sort of block puzzlers, Zen puzzlers, then you should really give this one a look, because I've been playing it. And it's one of those ones where my girlfriend's sitting there and going, oh, what's that? What are you playing? And like taking an interest. She does design and all that. She's interested. And I give it to her. And she sat there for a whole car journey playing it, really loving it. So, yeah, if you like your grid puzzlers, give this one a look. Kami, K-A-M-I, came out yesterday. Go and give it a bash. Okay. Now, you going to behave yourself?
Yeah, I'll behave myself.
If I hand this throne over to you.
Yeah. That's heavy.
Peter can't be trusted, Willington.
I'm sorry. It's the higher ups.
Is that what it is?
It's the higher ups. The
peer pressure.
It's. Do you know what? I'm just going to use this entire episode to be nasty about Joel. he turns up and he goes, "Oh, can you? I know people really like the podcast. Could you tell them about the magazine that we do?" And I go, "Yeah, all right, Joel."
Well, he's got funny eyebrows.
Oh, he's got his eyebrows make him look like Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wrong, am I right?
We should get him on the podcast.
Did we? And pretend anyway. We like his eyebrows, amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And everybody will be in on the joke, but he won't be. Anyway.
What have you been playing? Anyway.
What have I been playing? Okay. So the game I've been playing is Bullet Risk. One word.
Sorry.
Well, it
Bullet Risk.
Bullet Risk.
It's like calling a game oil flammable or something. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Heat dangerous. So, Bullet Risk, one word. So, I will preface all of this because, as I said earlier, responsible video game journalist. I am social with the person who created it. So I know the guy, been for a few drinks with him. I would call him a pal. There you go. I hope you trust me, listener. Hashtag defiance. I hope you trust me when I say that it is a very good shmup.
You are known for your fondness of the shmup genre.
I am fond of the shmup genre, that is correct. And so it's not a traditional cave shooter-esque ordeal. It's not Danmaku. In some ways, it's a little bit of a puzzler. So there's an area at the bottom of the screen that you can put your finger on, and it doesn't obscure the ship at all. And the ship can only move on a horizontal plane.
Right.
Can't move up or down. So, yeah, you can sort of slide along. It's almost like you've got like a roller, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Sliding on. Left or right. And you have to avoid the bullets that are coming at you. But the first time I played it, I was baffled, and I thought the game was broken because there were no bullets coming towards me.
Okay.
And this happened for 60 seconds.
It's not much of a shmup, is it?
It's not, is it? The game lasts 60 seconds, and you could and that's it, you know. And I thought, oh dear, I spent some money on this. I should probably get in touch with them and see what's happened. But I thought, oh, do you know what? I'll just play it again. And for some reason, I think my fat hands sort of tapped at the top of the screen by mistake. And bullets came out.
Ah.
So I kept tapping away at the top of the screen, and then these bullets came down, and then I dodged those, and I thought, brilliant. Okay, so I've got to move my ship while tapping the top of the screen. That's kind of like rubbing your tummy and tapping your head, right? But no, if you put two fingers on the screen at any one time, your score resets. So you have to tap at the top of the screen, mm-hmm. And then just at the final moment, just as you're about to get hit by a bullet, you've got to whip your finger down the screen and start moving your ship about.
Right.
And then make your way through this randomly generated pattern of bullets that are coming towards you. So this tap, 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 kind of like and this is going to be a hell of a reference, little yellow boxes that Hudson used to sell with one button on it to test how quickly you could tap a button. But
just to be clear, are you generating the bullets that you are then avoiding, or you're shooting bullets of your own?
You generate your own bullets that you have to avoid.
Right.
But as you're generating the bullets, you get 100 points.
Ah, and so the incentive is to generate as many bullets as you can.
As many as you can, but if you generate too many bullets, you're going to make things really difficult for yourself.
That is a bullet risk.
So, exactly, right? But the best thing is that you've got three lives. So if you get hit three times, game over after 60 seconds, and you've only got that 60 seconds, so you've got to hammer away at the top of the screen to really get some scores going.
Right.
But for every 10 taps, your score multiplier amplifies.
So
if you're really quick, you can get to the next multiplier within like one wave of bullets, effectively. Mm-hmm. You make things difficult for yourself. And you sort of experiment with figuring out what the best control method is going to be, right? So I got to this point where, and this was 2 o'clock in the morning, right, when I finally got my high score.
Right.
I was experimenting with all sorts of ways of holding the device. I was holding the screen horizontally. It's a vertical screen game. And I was tapping at the top of the screen and keeping my left hand at the bottom so I could, as soon as a bullet was just about to hit me, I could move out of the way rather than move my right hand, which was doing all the tapping, bottom and move around again. But I found that wasn't working because my reactions weren't quick enough to the point that eventually I would find that I was hitting it so quickly that my brain wouldn't go, you've got to stop tapping, and then my score would reset. And another really great thing is you hold three fingers on the screen and it starts again. So, you know, it just resets the game. So it's just got this really quick reset feature. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I broke the 1 million point mark. That was a task that I'd given myself to get to.
Making your own fun there, Peter.
It is, in a way, it is making your own fun. Now, it's brilliant, and I thoroughly suggest you go and play it, because I do genuinely think it's great. If there's a downside to it, I'm running on a 4S, and the screen slows, not good slowdown like we talked about before, but the screen slows down and can affect gameplay performance on a 4S.
Right.
And that's really annoying when you're going for high scores. There's a mode that you can implement where you can turn off some of the special effects, and that alleviates the stress basically completely. So it's makes it completely fine. But it's a bit of a shame that has to happen, because it becomes a very basic looking game at that point.
Sure.
The music's okay. Presentation's fine. Like, it's one guy who's making it, so you can kind of go, you can understand why it looks quite basic, but at the end of the day, for 69p, you can get the beautiful looking Angry Birds. You know, like, you know, it's not fair to me for me to say, oh, well, it's only one guy. You know, ultimately, it looks basic, but the gameplay is absolutely there. It's absolutely spot on. And like I was saying earlier, like, you know, there are some games that we play and they get deleted kind of quickly. This isn't leaving my device. Like, it's
sticking around, is it?
It's sticking around. So it is very, it is so compulsive, and it's just really well designed. So yeah, I thoroughly suggest you go and check it out and get on the leaderboards early, because the leaderboards are quite sparsely populated, shall we say, at the moment. So you can kind of get up there and get into the rankings first. And there is an achievement to beat the creator, which I thought was kind of novel. It's twice what I've got. So
that tomorrow night's task, then.
That's tomorrow night's task, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Bullet Risk. 69p, isn't it? 99.
Yeah, I believe so.
Good stuff! That Bullet Risk brings us to a safe audio end of the podcast. Thanks for joining us, as always. Go and find us on Twitter and Facebook and all those other things. And go to the story for the actual podcast. We mentioned it before, but all the stuff we've talked about, literally all of it, is all linked underneath our podcast story. Mm. So you can see the visuals and you can watch the videos and everything else that we've talked about here today. Come and join us next week, where we'll have a right old knees up and chat about a few more games. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.